Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are still, believe it or not, we're still in Article 1. There are seven articles. The seventh is really short, and most of them are short, but Article 1 has a lot of details and a lot of information. It identifies what Congress can do, how they're to form, how they're to be represented, who they represent, how many they represent. So there's a lot of details in Article 1, and it's the largest article of the entire three branches of government. And that's really because Congress is the sovereigns. As we went through the ratification debates, I don't think I highlighted these points, but there were plenty of times where people were really confused with the fact that there were two sovereigns in Congress instead of just one, the representatives of the people. And so a lot of people have a hard time back then. Today, everybody's oblivious to this concept of why we have bicameral legislative bodies. And it's this simple, folks. The Senate represents the sovereignty of the states. The House of Representatives represents the sovereignty of the people. And so this is why at the state level, we have both a Senate and a House of Representatives. Every state had it this way. Nebraska moved away from having a bicameral legislative body after the 17th Amendment because they felt, well, we've really moved towards a democracy, so they got rid of the House of Representatives and only have their senators. This is a travesty. This in itself is an indictment that actually shows how little people have been taught to understand this bicameral, or this what we call American republicanism. There are a lot of people that say, yeah, we're a republican form of government. And I think some people just refer to the republican form of government as the Republican Party. They don't even understand that a republican form of government is actually a layout of government that is one representative of whatever, of the people in most cases, but in America, it's representative of sovereigns. And it is also a government that is based on the rule of law, not based on the desires and whims of the people, as one would see a democracy to be. Let's kind of move forward as we dive into Article 1. Before we do that, let me also say that this show is also sponsored by republicreview.org, and you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and the academic evidence-based solutions. We have a few people that we want to support, or, you know, I'd actually get it out there to you that if you're looking for furniture, Timber Nation, especially if you're looking for solid hardwood furniture, timbernation.com. Awesome for your audio equipment, for your entertainment center, for your bookshelves, desks, or what have you. You're looking for something custom, you're looking for a challenge, these guys will do it for you. Give them an idea, just send them a drawing, and they will actualize what you're trying to do. They'll work with you. Anywho, Radio Dust Covers, radiodustcovers.com, and wethepeoplecalendar.com. If you're looking for a calendar that will give you a little bit of education year-round, the We the People calendar is really where you want to go. And Radio Dust Covers is how you can protect your gear that, you know, dust mites, pet dander, those types of things can, you know, do damage and or, you know, just make your stuff all bogged down. And actually, sometimes you'll actually find that if you let that stuff pile up on your electronics, it will eventually short out your equipment or overheat it or what have you. So let's try to, you know, save and preserve those really expensive pieces of equipment as we, you know, as we accumulate them. We got Red Pill Expo coming up in Louisiana. Have you talked to your legislatures? Have you pointed them to redpillexpo.org? If you go to the Red Pill Expo website, you'll find the admission and all that information. You can tell them that they can get free admission for the basic event. If they want to have the VIP admission, they'll pay the difference. If they want to stream, at a minimum, you need to get them to stream, because streaming will be at no charge to them. Okay, so what we need is we need to get them involved, and we need your help in getting that information out. As you know, we also have a comment line, 425-270-5416. And I actually got a phone call the other day, it was actually Sunday, from a gentleman by the name of, I'll just call him by his first name, Jason. And he wanted to ask me, you know, what's going on with the movement? Where am I? What's how's things happening? And I really didn't have too much time. And he was confused as to, you know, my relationship with the Convention of States. And so we kind of set that straight. And I pointed him to the podcast page. So even when you don't know what's going on, even when you, you know, have, you know, no clue as to what you need to do, you know, you can always dial 425-270-5416, and we'll call you back. And or if you give us your email, send us an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, and we'll get back with you. We'll help you, help guide you to where you can learn, get involved, what have you. So let's just kind of move forward. Harry, I hope you're listening. Now, where we left off, we were leaving off in Section 10. We hadn't finished Section 10 yet. And Section 10 is the restrictions that are placed on the state. And so we kind of already covered how the states, as well as the federal government, are not able to create bills of attainder and punishment and or ex post facto laws, or impairing obligations of contracts, grant any title of nobility, and so forth. Very similar to what the federal government has. And then, now we're going into the next subsection. No state, by the way, here's the interesting thing. No state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation. Now, this is actually being violated in a big way, because there are many states that actually, when Trump was in office, if you remember, I believe Washington, Oregon, California, and a lot of almost all of the blue states went into the treaty with the Paris Accords and agreed to them. They have no constitutional ability to do that. Trump should have actually gone after those governors and state legislatures and actually had them removed for violating their oath of office by failing to support the Constitution. There's got to be consequences to bad behavior like what we're seeing out of these politicians. There is the supreme law of the land. It's called the Constitution. And in the Constitution, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment disqualifies any public servant who actually violates their oath of office. So let's start using that. We need, and we have to start demanding that they actually apply Section 3 of the 14th Amendment to anybody and everybody who doesn't support the Constitution. I don't give a rat's behind if somebody does not support government. Government is not the Constitution, and what we see out of government is tyranny and despotism. Moving on into this subsection 2, no state shall, without the consent of Congress, lay any imposts or duties or imports or exports except what may be absolutely necessary for executing its inspection laws and the net produce of all duties and imposts laid by any state on imports or exports shall be for the use of the Treasury of the United States, and all such laws shall be subject to the revision and control of the Congress. No state, without the consent of Congress, lay any duty of tonnage, keep troops or ships in war or of war in time of peace, enter into any agreement or compact with another state or with a foreign power to engage in war unless actually invaded or in such imminent danger as will not admit of delay. So in other words, states can actually defend themselves, but they can't go into, you know, a war because they feel, you know, their heritage, like on the West Coast, there may be enough Hispanics that say, yeah, we gotta get involved in this war and protect our heritage or protect our fellow brethren in another country, such as, you know, countries to the south. Can't do it. The Constitution restrains them. The only power in the United States that can actually declare war is Congress, not any state. Anyway, as we look at the end of Article 1, we've done it. We successfully finished Article 1. I just want to point out that we've had a lot of, and if you started color coding how much of the Constitution so far we have, and what I'll do is I'm going to put this up. I will, when I'm done with this time around, with this Constitution, it's a color-coded Constitution, I will make sure that I put it up, and if I miss something, you can point out, aren't they violating this part of the Constitution as well? Because clearly, the Constitution is being violated in so many ways and in so many different directions. It would make a constitutionalist head spin if you didn't already know just how far outside the framework we have gotten. Most people think, they can do that, can't they? No, they cannot. Anyway, as we kind of look forward to the next section, which is Article 2, Section 1, the executive power shall be vested in a president of the United States of America. He shall hold his office during the term of 4 years and, together with the vice president chosen for the same term, be elected as follows. And now we get into, and we're coming into, the Electoral College. This whole area is all red because we do not follow the Electoral College process, and I will prove this when we come back. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so what we usually do and what we're going to do is we're actually going to do the Electoral College as it's amended. In other words, we're going to get into Article 2, and it talks about the Electoral College. And then what we'll do is we're going to read the 12th Amendment and the following amendment as a follow-up. So this way you can see how Article 2 had changed and what the Electoral College and how it's supposed to function now in accordance to the Constitution. And then we'll put context to this as of January 6th, what actually happened and why the group of people up there was a mob instead of good citizens petitioning government
to do their doggone job, because we had the right, the First Amendment right, and the constitutional right to demand the government do their job in accordance to the Constitution, and we failed. Those people who were there failed. Now, just to be clear, Bob Schultz was there, and he took our petition to Congress on the 5th of January, or actually the 4th, and Congress had received that. And all that information is on Reclaiming the Republic petitions page. So if you want to see the active lawsuit that's suing Congress for failing to support the Constitution and follow the process in the Constitution, well, go ahead and read it yourself. Anyway, so back to Article 2. Each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct a number of electors equal to the whole number of senators and representatives to which the state may be entitled in Congress, but no senator or representative or person holding an office of trust or profit under the United States shall be appointed an elector. In other words, it kind of identifies the unique qualification, because we already said in Article 1 that an elector has to meet the requirements, the minimum requirements of a representative in Congress. And so now they're basically saying that they can't be a representative or a person holding an office of trust or profit under the United States. In other words, they can't be employed by the U.S. government. Now, what this just said is each senator shall appoint in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct a number of electors to the whole number of senators. So in other words, they have the manner of choosing how these people are to be elected. Now, what that means is that they can actually divvy up the senators to the north and to the south of the state, or they can allow the two representatives, or I should say the two electors that will represent the two senators, to be general elections. In other words, everybody gets to vote for two at-large electors. Now, let's be clear here. I'm talking about the constitutional process, not what we do today, because what we do today is we actually vote for president, which is not within the Constitution. Nowhere here will you find me saying, and nor will you find in the Constitution, that we are to choose our president by popular vote. Not at all. We're to be voting for electors. And so the state legislature directs how we will be choosing our electors. We don't necessarily have an opportunity, because you got to understand that this is a representative government, and the legislature gets to delineate, because if you really have a divided state where the North and South might be, you know, the North may be more populated and the South may be less populated. And so you want to divide it up so that the North doesn't, you know, overrun both of those senator seats. And then you break down your actual congressional seats based on the congressional district. So those who vote in their congressional district would vote for their elector, which means that everybody would probably vote in that type of scenario for only two electors. Now, if you're voting for two senators at large throughout the state, then you would be voting for three electors, the one for your congressional district and then the two senators. But see, the state legislatures are supposed to determine how this is to be done and how you are to be able to choose who your electors are. So moving forward, The electors shall meet in their respective states and vote by ballot for two persons, of whom one at least shall not be an inhabitant of the same state with themselves. And they shall make a list of the persons voted for and of the number of votes for each, which list they shall sign and certify and transmit sealed to the seat of government of the United States, directed to the President of the Senate. The President of the Senate shall, in the presence of the Senate and House of Representatives, open all the certificates, and the votes shall be counted. The person having the greatest number of votes shall be the president. If such number be a majority of the whole number of electors appointed, and there be more than one who have such majority and have an equal number of votes. And the reason this became this possibility and that happened with Jefferson and Adams is because they're voting for two. So if they voted for both Jefferson and Adams, and both of them could have easily become a majority. And so as it goes on, if such a number be a majority of the whole number of electors appointed, and if there be more than one who have such majority and have an equal number of votes, then the House of Representatives shall immediately choose by ballot one of them for president. And if no person have a majority, then from the five highest of the list, the said House shall in like manner choose the president. But in choosing the president, the vote shall be taken by states, the representative from each state having one vote. A quorum for this purpose shall consist of a member or members from two-thirds of the states, and a majority of the states shall be necessary to a choice in every case after the choice of the president. The person having the greatest number of votes and the electors shall be the vice president. But if there should remain two more that who have equal votes, the Senate shall choose from them by ballot both the vice president. And this was the modification by the 12th Amendment. Now, let me go ahead and read how this kind of lays out. Each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislatures may direct a number of electors equal to the whole number of representatives to the states. Because what I'm going to do is I'm going to read this whole thing in one full sweep. And how they changed it, because they no longer vote for two. And so this is the change of how they do this. But no senator or representative or person holding an office of trust or profit under the United States shall be appointed an elector. The electors shall meet in their respective states and vote by ballot for president and vice president, one of whom at least shall not be an inhabitant of the same state with themselves. They shall name in their ballots the person voted for as president, and in distinct ballots, the person voted for as vice president, and the number of the votes for each, which list they shall sign and certify and transmit sealed to the seat of government of the United States, directed to the president of the Senate. The president of the Senate shall, in presence of the Senate, so the difference was that the electors now vote separately who's to be president and who's to be vice president. Okay, instead of it being vice president going to the person with the second amount of votes. Anyway, so in the presence of the Senate and House of Representatives, open all certificates and the votes shall be counted. The person having the greatest number of votes for president shall be president, if such a number be a majority of the whole number of electors appointed. If no person have such majority, then from the person's having the highest number, not exceeding three on the list of those voted for as president, the House of Representatives shall choose immediately by ballot. So in other words, if the Electoral College could not produce the president in the first ballot, then it goes immediately to the House of Representatives and choose by ballot the president. But in choosing the president, the vote shall be taken by states, the representation from each state having one vote. So in other words, out of the 50 states represented, there will only be 50 votes cast for president. Had Congress, January 6th, followed this process, because the Electoral College was unconstitutional. They only had 137 electors that were not unconstitutional. Therefore, there couldn't be a majority of electors to actually choose the president. So it would have gone straight to the House of Representatives to choose, and it would have fell out by states, and President Trump would have become president. A quorum of this purpose shall consist of a member or members of two-thirds of the states, and a majority of the states shall be necessary to a choice. If at the time fixed for the beginning of the term of president, the president shall elect have died, the vice president elect shall become president. If a president shall not have been chosen before the time fixed for the beginning of this term, or if the president-elect shall have failed to qualify because he was a non-citizen like Kamala Harris, then the vice president-elect shall act as president or shall be disqualified as well until a president shall have qualified, and the Congress may by law provide for a case wherein neither a president-elect nor a vice president shall have qualified, declaring who shall then act, or the manner in which one is to act shall be selected, and such person shall act accordingly until a president or vice president shall have qualified. The Congress may determine the time of choosing the electors and the day on which they shall give their votes, which day shall be the same throughout the United States. So that right there, my friends, is the Electoral College Clause as it's supposed to have happened, which didn't, because we've all been duped into believing we have popular vote in a democracy and they are making it up as they go along. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let me kind of summarize here, because what you didn't hear me say is you didn't hear me say that the parties shall choose your electors. I want you to understand something. The Democratic Party represents maybe 20%. Or 30% of the population, maybe. The Republican Party, now I'm not talking about how votes come out, and as a matter of fact, based on algorithms, I'm not sure that we're even close to the parameters. The parties have taken control, and they're the ones that are robbing you of your representatives, of your presidency, and so forth. But nowhere in the Electoral College of how we choose a president, is there anything that allows the parties to choose your electors for you? Show me in here where there's a allowance for a ticket, in other words, a primary, where the party actually chooses who they want to have as president. Not only do they choose the electors, but they narrow the field to say you can only have this person for the Democratic field and this person for the Republican field. Now, maybe they tried to do this to simplify stuff, but I have faith in the Electoral College. I have faith that you can actually find somebody within your congressional district that actually understands politics and understands and will commit to voting for a very specific person or a very specific ideology, so forth and so on. The fact of the matter is that the electors are the ones who decide which one is president and which one is vice president. Not the president gets to choose his running mate. Remember, Lincoln had a Democratic vice president. He didn't choose it. The Electoral College chose it. And so everybody, these liars, this, I don't know who this guy is. He's quasi-famous that's out there doing videos for the popular vote. He's lying to you. There is nowhere in the Electoral College process where we voted directly for the president, at least not for a long time. There were several presidency runs, and as a matter of fact, I need to get Keith Broders. Keith, if you're listening, I know you listen most of the time. We need to have this conversation because the guy that really researched this the most and the guy that always impresses me with his tenacity in research is Keith Broders. So with that, I want to be very clear that if you look at the Electoral College, what we have in the process today, as a matter of fact, I was actually at a convention where the Washington State Republicans selected an unqualified person for the Electoral College. You have to be minimum, what age? 25. They selected one guy that was 18 years old, the youngest Republican in the room. And nobody batted an eye. Are you kidding? And it doesn't say the only people that they can't choose for president is somebody they have to choose one person out of the two people they choose. Both of them cannot be from the same state. At least one person has to be out of that state. So in other words, if Trump decides to run and DeSantis becomes his running mate, it can't happen because they both live in Florida. So I want you to understand that if you start understanding the Electoral College and how it's supposed to be, they're not following it. So what we have to do is we actually have to get your state legislators to look in, and they need to turn their backs on the parties. The greatest thing that America could do is turn its back on the Republican and Democratic Party. Now, I know there's lots of good Republicans out there, but the party itself is corrupt. The party itself is self-aggrandizing, and they've been the power brokers of American politics for way too long. And they've been the front to allow the globalists who have seized control of the parties to ensure that they've hedged their bets, to ensure that somebody is going to be moving America down the path that they want America to move. So anyway, now let me go on to the next portion of Section 1. No person except a natural-born citizen, this I think is subsection 3, I don't have it listed here, no person except a natural-born citizen. Now I'm pointing out citizen again because here the Constitution is identifying that everybody that lives in these states are citizens of the United States, or a citizen of the United States at the time of the adoption of this Constitution shall be eligible to the office of president. So in other words, no person except a natural born citizen. It means you have to be born in the United States. Now, you have to be born citizen. Kamala Harris, Kamala Harris, she is not a born citizen. Both of her parents were aliens who were subject to different countries. Neither of them were citizens. So just because she was born here doesn't give her citizenship. Her citizenship is tied to her parents. And if you read the 14th Amendment, it is very clear that you have to be subject to the United States, and her parents were not subjects to the United States. So anyway, or a citizen of the United States at the same time of the adoption shall be eligible to be to the office of president. Neither shall any person be eligible to that office who shall not have attained to the age of 35 years and be 14 years a resident within the United States. In other words, If you are a U.S. citizen, a naturally born citizen, and you leave and you're on emissary duty and you live outside the United States, when you come back, you have to reside in the United States for 14 years before you can run for president. Just so you understand that. In case of removal of the president and or of his death, resignation, or inability to discharge the powers and duties of the said office, the same shall devolve on the vice president, and the Congress may by law provide for the case of removal, death, resignation, or inability both of the president and vice president, declaring what officer shall then act as president. And no such officer shall act accordingly until the disability be removed or a president shall be elected. And this is the 25th Amendment, just so you understand. The 25th Amendment gives the vice president and the presidential cabinet the ability to remove the president. We're actually looking at the possibility of even exacerbating the crisis, the constitutional crisis that we have by not having a president, and then having the presidency hijacked by Kamala Harris and the executive branch, or I should say the chiefs of the executive branch. If you look at the Secretary of State and the secretaries of all the departments underneath the president, the executive departments. We're actually looking at, you know, a first time where the Constitution and what is going on in the executive has nothing to do with the process of choosing the president and making a constitutional president or a legitimate president under the Constitution. Anyway, the president shall at stated times receive for his service a compensation which shall neither be increased nor diminished during the period for which he shall have been elected, and he shall not receive within that period any other emolument from the United States or any of them or any of the other states. Before he enter on the execution of his office, he shall take the following oath or affirmation. I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will faithfully execute the office of the president of the United States and will to the best of my ability preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. We have a president that is doing none of these things. He is not faithfully executing the office, nor is he preserving, protecting, and defending the Constitution. Section 2 of Article 2. The president shall be commander-in-chief of the Army and Navy of the United States. And I don't know why they include the Army, because the Army doesn't exist only when during times of war or when the Congress shall call forth the militia to federalize. Anyway, and of the militia of the several states when called into actual service of the United States. So just to be clear, this is synonymous. The chief of the Army and the Navy of the United States and the militia of the several states. So why is the militia? Because the militia actually is to be trained and the standards and those types of things are to be set. There is a reality that they can actually, just like the reservists, actually have drills or what have you. It's within the power of the chief executive, or I should say the commander-in-chief, to be able to ensure the discipline, standards, and so forth are being applied and actually having them not necessarily executing the laws of the union or anything else, but for training purposes. But that's to fall underneath the states and Congress. Congress actually needs to actually set these types of standards. As you know from the Whiskey Rebellion, the Congress actually handed over to the president the ability to call forth the militia, as you know. Now, that was actually unconstitutional because there needs to be a barrier between the executive, who could become a tyrant, and Congress. And so the only way Congress could actually have done what they did was to actually amend the Constitution to state that the president shall call forth the militia, not Congress. But anywho, because that's a very clear process within the Constitution. Anyway, when we get back, we'll get more into that and impeachments right after this. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I'm trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so let me get back to this Article 2. I think we're still in Section 2. Yes, the President shall be the Commander-in-Chief of the Army and the Navy of the United States and of the militia of the several states when called into actual service of the United States. Now, there shall not be a standing army. The existence of the army is only called for in need of, you know, if there's a declaration of war. Because they can't equip and arm an army without having some declaration of war or without having a cause to defend itself. So when we look at the Civil War, was the United States under attack? Absolutely not. The Southern states seceded and said, good luck to you. You're on your own. We're on our own. There was no attack made to any of the states that were left in the Union. None. There wasn't a military action at all done by the Southern states. The Southern states, they got ready for war because they heard the rancor and rhetoric coming from Lincoln saying, you can't do this and I won't let you do it type of thing. And so they prepared to defend themselves. So without a declaration of war, Lincoln moved forward as the commander-in-chief and called forth the militia. And for 3 months, the militia failed. And in all honesty, that is why the Constitution is clear. Only Congress can do this. Congress cannot abdicate their duties and responsibility that is spelled out in the Constitution. Even if they create a bill, even if they create an act in allowing the president to do it, it is no more constitutional than it is for the state, the state of Iowa, to declare war. It's equally unconstitutional. So anyway, let me just kind of move forward. Now, when called into actual service of the United States, he may require, now this is interesting, the president, he may require the opinion in writing of the principal officers in each of the executive departments upon any subject relating to the duties of their respective offices, and he shall have power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States, except in cases of impeachment. Now, Isn't that interesting that he can actually require the opinion in writing of the principal officers in each of their executive departments upon any subject relating to the duties of their respective offices? That almost sounds like a punishment. You know, I'm not happy with you, and I want you to give me in writing a detailed paper on your duties as the Secretary of State regarding, you know, embassies, emissaries, or what have you, right? The reason that this was done was to allow people like Hamilton to come along and actually, when the office is created, let these guys start creating their own rules and policies of how the Department of Treasury, and actually Hamilton as the Secretary of the Treasury, because Thomas Jefferson wasn't in town yet, he actually configured the Secretary or the State Department and the Secretary of State duty. So when Jefferson shows up, he goes, "What the heck is this? This is not what I agreed to." And it was nothing but a quarrel from that point on. And as a matter of fact, what Hamilton did was a violation of this part of the Constitution, because clearly the president may require the opinion in writing of the principal officer in each of the executive departments upon any subject relating to the duties of their respective offices. Hamilton was not the Secretary of State. Hamilton, doing what he did, actually violated, and if the president asked him to do this, the president actually violated that as well. Anyway, and George Washington, who had the utmost respect and admiration for Hamilton, didn't know what he was doing, because he truly didn't know what a maniacal person Hamilton was. Anyway, he, the president, shall have power and with, I'm sorry, he shall have power by and with the advice and consent of the Senate to make treaties. So the president has the power to make treaties, and for the treaty to actually be effective or legitimate, he has to make that treaty where two-thirds of the senators present concur. Here's the thing. It was also defined in the ratification debates that they cannot make a treaty that is not within the enumerated powers. Now, why do you think that that's important? Well, it doesn't stipulate that here. So somebody might actually think that they can make a treaty over education or over gun control or over things that they're absolutely restricted from, or things that they just have no power at all. And my point is that this is how important the ratification debates are in setting the terms and definitions. If we were canonizing or definitizing the Constitution, I would put a footnote here and I would reference Mr. Nicholas's statement in setting the terms of treaties, that treaties must be within the enumerated powers and cannot be made legitimate outside of those enumerated powers. Anyway, he shall have the power by and with the advice and consent of the Senate to make treaties, provided two-thirds of the senators present concur. He shall, and I'm actually going to have this highlighted, because that is being violated big time, because they're making treaties, and they've been making treaties well outside well outside those enumerated powers. And he shall nominate and by and with the advice and consent of the Senate shall appoint ambassadors, other public ministers and consuls, judges of the Supreme Court, and all other officers of the United States whose appointments are not herein otherwise provided for, and which shall be established by law. Now, when they say shall be established by law, within the enumerated powers, in pursuant to the Constitution. In other words, they just can't bequeath a law like the Alien and Sedition Acts and say, okay, now we're creating a czar over this. We've had so many presidents violate this part of creating these ambassadors and all of these other things where they have no constitutional standing. Obama was creating all these different czars for people who had, there was no role responsibility. There wasn't even an executive department, an unconstitutional executive department over some of these things. He was literally creating bureaucracies. And so, folks, if you didn't know, you know, you've heard me talk about the Clintons, you've heard me talk about the Bushes. Every single president, all these globalists, should be impeached. And the evidence is more than ample. I truly believe they will be convicted of treason, and they shall. You know, and how cheap would it be? You know, America could actually say, we hanged these presidents all with the same rope, and it only cost us $15.99 or whatever. But just proving the point that these men and how they violated the Constitution in so many different ways, they all have committed treason. Now, the treasonous offense is how, you know, like Obama was directly supporting via the NGOs in the establishment of ISIS. Clinton was basically giving China. I mean, everybody was giving China crap. Anywho, as we move on, but the Congress may, by law, vest the appointment of each such inferior officers as they think proper in the president alone, in the courts of law, or in the heads of departments. So now they're talking about those appointments of inferior. You want to understand how deep the deep state goes? Well, there you go. When you start actually going into the inferior positions within the FBI, within all of these unconstitutional branches and departments and offices and agencies, you know, like Brennan, all of these appointments, all of these sub-appointments are being done by the deep state. You can't tell me how deep the deep state goes. People can't even fathom. But you want to actually just like that. That was a bad snap. Just like that. That's a good snap. We could get rid of all of the deep state with Republic Review by forcing the federal government into full compliance and getting rid of every role, responsibility, and power they have no delegated authority to exercise. The Environmental Protection Agency, all of these unconstitutional bureaucracies, gone just like that. Yeah, it was another bad snap. Anyway, the president shall have power to fill up vacancies that may happen during the recess of the Senate by granting commissions which shall expire at the end of their next session. So that's happened, and Obama had actually done that, where he actually filled judge seats while supposedly Congress or the Senate was not in session. However, they were in session, and he got caught, and he actually violated the Constitution when he did that. The Supreme Court called him out on it. Section 3 of Article 2. He shall from time to time give to the Congress information of the State of the Union and recommend to their consideration such measures as he shall judge necessary and expedient. And so this is the State of the Union, and what we will do is we'll end here, and we'll actually pick it up with Section 3, the beginning of the State of the Union, when we come back. I hope you're starting to understand just how little of the Constitution we're actually abiding by, and there's something we can do about it, and what is it going to take to get you involved? I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and Republic Review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.